Do you have a third pick on this card?
Fuck no. Like, I don't know any of these people. Like, what the fuck? Like, I'm...
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Two Fight Fans Podcast. I'm your first fight fan, Colin.
And I'm the other Stuart.
And Stu, you want to start us off today because we have something on the horizon here.
Yeah, a card just as big as UFC 300. UFC yeah, 301. A pretty lackluster card overall, especially for the way that it's been built up and advertised to the audience. But we will be covering off on UFC 301. Maybe a little look back on the UFC Apex card from this past Saturday. Although there's only, one or two fights of note on that card entirely. And then anything else that we decide to talk about. But we're going to kick things off with UFC 301. We're going to make picks this time, even though it won't be as comprehensive as UFC 300. I have to find a way to waste 2 hours of Colin's life since he wasted 2 hours of mine with Never Back Down. So we'll just make three picks. We'll kind of just go through mainly the main card because it's pretty weak on the preliminary card for UFC 301. So main event, flyweight title, Alexandra Pantoja and your favorite fighter, Steve Ursig.
Oh, yeah, please. Please tell me more.
Why don't you give us a breakdown of Steve Ursig's entire game and everything he's done in the UFC?
Yeah. Let me do that for you. I see he has fought three people in the UFC. I know nothing about Steve Ursig. I really don't know.
It's
looking him up, his nickname Astro Boy. That's cool.
Dude, I knew when we were going to talk about this fight, I was like, the one thing Colin's going to be into is that his nickname is Astro Boy. I could feel it. I was like, this will be the thing Colin latches on to.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, don't blame yourself because it's not your fault that you don't know who Steve Ursig is. Because the UFC, although wanting him to be a title challenger and be the B-side to a pay-per-view, has buried him on the prelims for all three fights that he's had. They've had no fanfare around him. They, as they continually do with flyweights, never put them on the main card, except when they put them on the title, or not the title fight, the main fight of an Apex card like last weekend, and then fill the rest of the card with absolute trash so nobody actually watches. The UFC continuously does not build up other rising contenders in the flyweight division. But here's the thing. Steve Ursig's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Okay.
He is primarily a boxer. And like when I say a boxer, not a guy who knows how to punch. A guy who like actually utilizes footwork and angles. He doesn't enter in a straight line and then leave on a straight line. He will enter and then cut an angle or sidestep. He's usually doubling up his jab and throwing 3 to 6 punch combinations in a row. He has very good defense. He stays right in the pocket. He looks like somebody who's quote unquote a classically trained boxer who transitioned to MMA. He doesn't quite have that like smushed boxer's nose. But if you see him, it looks like he has only one nostril because his nose has been crushed multiple times, it looks like. But a very, very slick, I've been really impressed, slick boxer. I'm a sucker for anyone that doubles up the jab or will hook off the jab or will take an angle after they finish their combination, by which I mean just not backing straight up, actually stepping off to the side. And for most MMA fighters, that's a pretty confusing technique for him to utilize. So he's had some really beautiful, you know, comes in, does a combination, exits out of the pocket. They try to retaliate, and then a left hook counter, and floors. He floored Matt Schnell that way. Pretty impressive, and really big for a flyweight. I think he's 5'8".
Yeah.
Yeah. So really tall, very lanky. Tall. I think because of that, he doesn't quite have the horsepower of someone like Alexandre Pantoja, who's like just a little tank. He doesn't quite have the athletic dynamism of, you know, Figueiredo or Moreno or other kind of perennial top flyweights. So he's at a bit of a disadvantage there. What I don't know, and what I don't think anyone knows besides maybe his coach, is does Steve Ursig have a ground game? How is he at defending takedowns? How is he, once he is taken down, is he good at reversing? Is he a guard player? We never really seen any of that within the UFC. And that doesn't really seem to be his focus overall. So, with that in mind, Alexandre Pantoja, very good top game. Likes to take people down. He's primarily a counterpuncher, but kind of like a slow, marauding counterpuncher that's going to come in and kind of swing big punches. And Moreno really gave him trouble just because he threw so much insane offense at him and was just having so much variety that it kind of overwhelmed Pantoja. But Pantoja can get tired and keep fighting for five rounds. So, you know, it might be a bad style matchup. This could be something where Pantoja comes in, Ursig is piecing him up, Pantoja grabs a hold of him, and just like through sheer horsepower, takes him to the ground and then beats him up there. But something is telling me that Steve Ursig, no one knows who he is, but I think he's gonna do it. I think he's gonna knock out Pantoja. I think he's gonna probably do it in the first, probably round 3 or 4. I'll say fourth round. Ursig is gonna knock out Pantoja.
Okay,
that's my pick. So that's the breakdown I have for the fight. I know you don't know who Steve Ursig is, but that's the dynamic.
Can you tell me how Steve Ursig got this title fight? Like just looking at the current rankings, like how did this, like, did he step in late notice, like, because the original fighter was like got injured? What happened? Because there's a lot of like game people ahead of him that I feel like would be, again, to kind of build up the fanfare around the flyweight division and this championship fight. But
So
I have no idea.
So the main event for this card was initially supposed to be Jamahal Hill and Alex Pereira.
Right.
Again, this, as much as we love 301 and we gushed over it, and now UFC 300, and Colin loves the BMF title now. That fight was not meant to be for that card. That was meant to be for this card. And so then this would kind of be, it'd have less eyes on it. It'd still be a co-main event, but not as big. So if we go through the rankings, right, number one is Brandon Royval. He just had a title shot. He was Pantoja's last title defense.
Right.
And Pantoja has beaten him twice. Brandon Moreno has lost 3 or 4 times now to Pantoja. I think they also fought in at the Ultimate Fighter, and so maybe it's 3 times. Even though those, like, quote unquote, don't count, but
okay,
it's still a real fight. There's Amir Albazi. I think, don't quote me exactly on the nature of the injury. I know it's a neck injury. Maybe herniated a disc in his neck recently. Oof. And had to pull out of a fight. Kaikar France had a really bad concussion in training. Let's see, Nicolau just fought against Alex Perez. They were the main event for this last week, which Nicolau should not. He's proven to be pretty chinny. Here's the quick rundown of last week's card. Mateusz Nicolau, good, but he's always going to be middling. A little too chinny, can't take punches that'll allow him to compete at the elite level of the division. Alex Perez, good to see him back. I think he'd had 13 canceled fights in his entire time at the UFC. So glad that he finally got a win. Manal Cape got injured. He was the reason that Alex Perez stepped in. Muhammad Makhachev, I think it was between Makhachev and Steve Ursig. I think they had initially gone to Makhachev to ask if he could be ready for this because I don't think this was set in stone until they announced UFC 300, the main card, or the title fight at the top of UFC 300.
Oh, okay.
So it, I think they just went to Makhachev and Steve Ursay because they're basically the next people in the division, right? Number 7 and number 10.
Right.
And asked, like, who's willing to come in on short notice, not like a full 6 to 8 week camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And okay. Steve Ursig said he would do it. Yeah. So yeah, that was a. That's the nature of that. So, but you know what? I think he's gonna do it. There's something I can feel. He's got the nickname what? Astro Boy. I know you're into that, and I think that's.
It's a great name. what do you feel deep in your loins for this? That gives you this. Steve Ursig's got that puncher's chance.
Seeing anyone with like actually good footwork and know how to like throw intelligent combinations always gives me strange feelings deep in my plums. But I think also right Pantoja in the Moreno fight, as much as he like willed himself to victory there, yeah. And his athletic gifts and the physicality that he has about himself allowed him to go there. I mean, he absorbed a lot of damage, and he really, that was like a real knockdown, drag out war. I know that wasn't the same for the Brandon Royval fight, but he got tired. He has a tendency to kind of like gas in the first 2-3 rounds of a fight, but he just wills himself forward, kind of like the Terminator, and absorbs so much punishment that the other people kind of wilt under that as well. And I think you can't do that for too long. Like the chin will eventually go, you know, the body will eventually kind of go, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not saying that Pantoja himself will quit. He doesn't seem like someone that ever quits. But I think a really big, right? I think Ursig has got a 3-inch height advantage on him. So he's going to be hitting him right off the shoulder line, right? He's not going to be punching up or, like, really punching down. It's going to be right level with his shoulder. And having someone who's a really slick puncher against Pantoja, who Pantoja likes to kind of wade forward and, like, try to counter. And I don't think he's going to be as able to effectively counter. And then getting tired is not great if you want to kind of not get wobbled. So that's kind of my pick. I just think... Ursig is really fresh. I've been impressed with what he's been able to do, and like Pantoja's getting a little bit older. He's almost 35, I think. I think he's 34. And he's been through like some actual wars, so I think this is the time.
Okay. Yeah. That was a very, very nice breakdown. Thank you. For someone especially who doesn't know the challenger, I guess.
Does he look like he works at like Geek Squad or like the last Radio Shack in Australia? Yeah, he does. But the dude can punch. Well, not like he's got a crazy amount of power, but they're very pretty. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, maybe I'm blinded to that.
Okay. No. Okay. Yeah. I mean, with knowing very little, since we do have a bet going on, and I'm just gonna be conservative on this one. I'm just gonna say Pantoja, fifth round decision, because like I've liked what I've seen, you know, kind of like you said, like he tends to tire or like just plod forward, not plod forward, but you know, he puts on a lot of pressure. Like watching his Moreno and Royval fights, like I thought they were all like fairly, like somewhat competitive with Moreno, and just like it is one of those like, just that I'm just gonna keep, you know, putting pressure forward, and this is my style of fighting, and I think I again without knowing much of Steve Ursig, like unless he fights with the same sort of, either countering or like technical precision that I saw with like Moreno a couple times. Like I don't really see like what hole he's going to exploit without having that insane, like you're highlighting like his punching power or something that could stop someone coming in, just walking in that way. But actually, what was unique about this fight is, did you watch the Mighty Cast, what most recent one, when he had Izzy on it?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, they were talking a lot.
Mighty Cast?
It's Demetrius Johnson's podcast where he interviews the fighters. So it was actually a really good interview with him and Izzy. And Izzy kind of talks about like what you started this whole episode with, about how like the flyweights are like the most entertaining. They have the most technique. They're like, you know, they're so fast and everything you do, like the most, like most fans, most like people watching don't pick up on the little things that are done every single time that you have to operate at that level, because, you know, at that weight class, speed and technique are king. So you're like, unless you're really trained, you're really in it, you don't see all the little things that are happening. So yeah, maybe like you're saying, some of this technique that Steve Ursink has will get him that edge over Pantoja. But I don't know. I like this whole division actually right now is looking. It's interesting because I don't know how, like, if Pantoja keeps winning, how do you remarket fights with like Brandon Moreno, who is, you know, a fan favorite now, if he has lost three times already to him? I don't know.
Yeah, right. Like, there's so much parity at the top, which I think also kind of speaks to Pantoja doesn't have, like, when you think about what, like, a UFC champion or a long-reigning UFC champion would have in their skill set, what tools they'd have. Pantoja doesn't really necessarily have that, right? Like, he doesn't have one overwhelming, he isn't like Israel Adesanya or Alex Pereira, where he has such an advantage in one overwhelming area over the rest of the competition that it insulates him from necessarily needing to pick up skills or level up his game in other areas. Nor does Pantoja have kind of what like Islam Makhachev has Ilya Topuria, which is, hey, I'm great everywhere, and not only am I great everywhere, I am an elite athlete as well to complement all of that. So it's going to be really hard if you can't like throw me off my game. You're not going to be able to like out athlete me. You're not going to be able to like out chin me or outweigh me. Pantoja just basically, he's got a ton of heart, but I mean, it was a split decision win over Moreno. Moreno could have won that fight. The Royval won, not so much. I'm not super impressed with, I mean, Royval is very good in that division, but he also doesn't have a skill set that makes me think of like an elite champion. A lot of these guys in this division don't. None of them really have that, like that thing that makes them like Demetrius Johnson, you know?
Yeah. I was looking at the flyweight champion holders, and really no one said, well, Demetrius Johnson just ruled over the division for so long. Like,
yeah,
he literally, like, he was head and shoulders above everyone else and cleared out the division like twice over.
Yeah.
Henry Cejudo had that, like you were talking about, like just that dominant wrestling ability that no one could figure out. No one could really, you know, like outmatch, except for I wanted him and Demetrius Johnson to rematch each other, but we never got that. And
against Dom Cruz?
No. Henry Cejudo and Demetrius Johnson.
Oh, Henry Cejudo, yeah.
Yeah. And
well, Demetrius won that, their second fight.
Yeah, but
no, he won. That was like one of the biggest robberies I've seen in a long time. He beat him the first time. He beat him the second time. Like, anyway,
I really want to know like why they didn't grant him an immediate rematch after that. But also, why they traded him so quickly.
He wanted that.
He wanted out.
Yeah, he wanted to go. Well, yeah, he was done in the UFC. He wasn't making a ton of money. I mean, yeah, I think said like most of his, I think his fight against Dominic Cruz, he got paid 20-20. Jeez. And I think even for his like last few title defenses, you know, when he was on the cusp of, you know, 9, 10, 11 title defenses, he was only making, I think, $100,000, $125,000.
Jeez.
From the UFC. Yeah, a tiny, tiny amount. And he would lead pay-per-views or he would lead cards. And so he wanted out. One was willing to pay more. His coach, Matt Hume, is the matchmaker and like on the board of like the rules commission for One. So there's a little bit of a, hey, I can go where my coach has more sway. And then he can do more stuff, get paid more money, and fight under rules that he prefers and with an organization that probably is easier to negotiate with, because the UFC seemed to really dislike him. Anyway, so he's the one that wanted out.
Okay.
It wasn't like the UFC purposely traded him. He went to them and said, hey, I'd like to go there. And then I don't know how involved he was with the selection of Ben Askren as the person to trade over. So yeah, like, right, I think we talked about this.
Oh yeah, from then, like, it's exactly like you said, the flyweight division has been kind of like all over the place with no real defining like heir to the belt of like, this is like my time and my dominant reign here. So yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what to make like of the future of this division here. Like, hopefully, you know, something comes out from this, but yeah, it's just in comparison to some of the other weight class right now, which is not good for the lighter weight classes because they get like no attention, like you said, and like no sort of fanfare following, unless you're like a really diehard fan. It just makes it kind of this like filler where they'll just throw in these fighters whenever they're needed, and every now and then serve up one of them for a championship fight, you know?
Yeah. But listen, I would gladly watch a top 25 flyweight fight far more than any fight at light heavyweight or any fight at heavyweight, except maybe one or two people in those divisions. Like,
I'm 100% with you. I love the flyweight division, and I think they need to do more to it to like prop it up a little bit and make people realize like how dynamic, exciting these fights actually are. But
yeah, it's such everyone and their mother knows, right? Like, it's, they don't, right? Steve Ursig, who's going to be their title challenger, don't put him on main cards. Don't get his name out there. Don't put him in a position of any like clout if he would get a win. And then they throw him on a card and go, well, why is nobody interested in this card? I was like, well, you haven't done anything to really build up this fighter in any way. And then they go, well, okay, we'll just keep burying the flyweights at the bottom of the prelims because they can't sell pay-per-views. Oh, shit, we need them to sell a pay-per-view? Well, they didn't sell before, so we can use that to justify putting them at the bottom of a preliminary card. And then the cycle just kind of continues endlessly without anyone realizing that, you know. Yeah. It's like drinking bleach and being like, why am I sick? I better drink more bleach. Something bad must be inside of me. And then you just keep being sick. It's silly.
Don't drink bleach, please.
Don't drink bleach. Though, if you brush your teeth with it, you get those pearly whites. Don't do that either.
Oh my god!
I once knew someone who did that. It's a bad call. Anyway, so that's the main fight. Nobody cares about it. We've spent way too long on it. Steve Ursig, I'm going with a plum pick. You're going with the really boring,
super boring
Pantoja pick, and. If Pantoja wins, I will again cry foul, just the same as Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, and say that being athletic is cheating. And that's the only
reason. You said it yourself, man. You said it last week.
Yeah, I know. And like, look, I might totally be wrong. And Pantoja walks through every punch Ursig throws and then just like wrestles him to the, or takes him to the ground just and manhandles him there. And I'll go, well, I guess being good at anyone's skill is pointless. And that'll be the lesson I take.
Maybe that's his skill.
Pantoja's skill is knowing that he needs no skill.
Yeah.
He's just like very zen, and he's like, just let the body do the talking. Yeah, maybe. That's disappointing for the rest of us. All right. The next fight, Jonathan Martinez, Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
Pick on that one.
Man, okay. And it's confirmed that this is Jose Aldo's final fight with the UFC, right? Like,
yes. So his
contract ends after this.
The background with this was he had retired, and then He still had one fight on the contract, but the UFC were willing to let him go, and they would. But under contract, he legally was required, because he's been taking boxing matches now. He has to ask the UFC each time, is it okay that I do this boxing match? And they have to grant him permission because he's still technically under contract. And he wanted to be, and up until this point, they have been granting him permission to take these boxing matches. But he wanted to be on the card with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, get a bunch of eyes on him, get a bunch of money. And the UFC said, no, you can't do that one. And so in order to do that, he has to fight out his contract, and they finally granted it to him. Although he wanted Dominic Cruz in this fight, which I think would have been a better fight overall. They're both closer in age. They said, no, we're going to give you a young up-and-comer who we think might have a chance to beat you. So UFC being a little petty, it's sad to see that like Jose Aldo needs to come back. They're selling it as like the return of the King of Rio, and they're using him in marketing a lot.
Yeah.
But it's not because he really wants to come back and fight MMA. It's because he just wants to get out of this draconian contract that he's under.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very sad.
It is. It is. And I love Jose Aldo. I want all the best for him. I don't think that's what this fight's going to be, though. I don't think this is going to be his like send off, you know, big win. I think Jonathan Martinez is going to, I think he's going to win by second round TKO. That's my prediction.
Damn. Just no faith.
I would love to be proved wrong, but also it's a bantamweight again. Like that's got to be tough for Jose Aldo to get down to again. I mean, that was tough when he was like younger and like,
I don't know. He's never had a weight miss there. He's looked pretty good in the past.
Yeah. It's just, Jose Aldo's also always been big in his divisions, you know, and like he was fairly big at 145. So,
yeah, I think he was doing a little bit of the Ricky Hatton thing where he was blowing up quite a bit in between camps. Whereas I think with when he went to bantamweight, he was much more
disciplined about it and like staying closer there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Have you seen a lot of Jonathan Martinez's fights?
I've only seen highlights of him. Actually, I did see one of his fights. Let me pull up here. Which one did I see?
The Adrian Yanez one?
I saw the highlights of that one. I saw the Cub Swanson fight.
Okay, so if you're looking at those fights on Wikipedia, what is the method by which he won?
Yeah, it says TKO leg kick.
Bingo. Jonathan Martinez, 50% of his entire game is landing leg kicks very hard.
Yeah.
You know who's the best at not getting leg kicked and punishing people that throw leg kicks? My boy, Jose Aldo. I think Jonathan Martinez is going to implode his leg on either Jose Aldo. Like, Jose Aldo, amazing. When the calf kick got introduced and everyone's like, oh, there's no defense for the calf kick. Jose Aldo came in, somebody throws a calf kick. What does he do? He just pulls his leg away. He just goes, no. And he just moves it out of the way. And people go spinning like a top and fly off to the side. I think Jose Aldo, I'm placing my bet on Jose. I think Jonathan Martinez, I don't think he'll be able to get his leg kick game going against Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo is very good at pulling his leg away, which like, what a novel thing. That you can just like move your leg closer together so that people miss. Really great at checking leg kicks. He might have moved away from leg kicking in his own game as he got older, but he's still very good at making sure that he takes minimal damage from leg kicks and punishing it when people throw it.
Okay.
And I think Jonathan Martinez kind of has over-indexed on leg kicks as part of his game, and a lot of these dudes just still don't know how to defend against it. Old Cub Swanson, I feel bad. He's like old, but he got his legs chewed to bits by a lot of people. So Jonathan Martinez just seized on that. And Adrian Yanez just had such a wide stance and seemed like incapable of checking calf kicks. So I think Jose Aldo, by decision, I think
by decision. Wow.
By decision. Okay. It's only three rounds, remember?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Jose Aldo, by decision, he's going to – they think this is going to be Jonathan Martinez. They're like, oh, we're going to have the new leg kicker go against the old leg kicker. But, yeah, here's my thing. I love Jose Aldo. Some of the best technique I've ever seen. Also, he definitely entered, like, 7 cheat codes for athleticism. That dude is so athletic. He's disgusting. Yeah. And I think mix that athleticism with the ability to kind of shut down a good portion of Martinez's game. Boom. We got a Jose Aldo win. He gets to go. Hopefully fights on the undercard of Tyson and Paul, and just everyone lives happily ever after.
Okay.
Alrighty. So I said we're only going to do 3 picks because you look at the rest of this card. Holy shit, it's not good. Do you have a third pick on this card?
Fuck no. Like, I don't know any of these people. Like, what the fuck? Like, I can't pronounce half of these names either. Like, who is Miktibik?
Miktibik.
Oralby.
Miktibik Oralby.
It's a lightweight fight on the prelims.
I don't even see that fight. Miktibik Oralby against Elvis Brenner. Bro, I don't know. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, I do know. He's out of, is it Uzbekistan? He's like an actual, like, this guy's a stud. This actually is a fight that, like, is going to surprise you and you should watch.
Okay.
Yes. No. I know this guy. Where is he out of? Let me find him. Or maybe it's Kazakhstan. He's another one of these dudes that wears, like, the traditional headdress and, like, looks like he, like, came out of, like, an extra from, like, a movie about, like, Genghis Khan or the Mongols. Like, this dude's a stud. He takes everyone down and submits them. He's pretty good. We'll probably be talking about him a lot more after this fight.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, look, on the main card, dude, it's a light heavyweight fight, so you know I don't even want to talk about it. Anthony Smith, Vitor Petrino. Anthony Smith seems like a nice guy. A nice person in fight sports is actually pretty hard to find, or like a genuinely kind person. So like, I like Anthony Smith. Do I think he's very good? No. Whatever. I'm not going to talk about light heavyweight. I hate the division. But 2 middleweight fights. Oh boy. Paul Craig, Bahalio.
Kyle.
These are 2 dudes. Yeah, that like they only know how to like grapple, and that's about it. So it's just going to be a really sloppy middleweight grapple fest. Who cares about that fight? The only funny thing is Paul Craig is Scottish, and he wears the Braveheart blue face paint. Why? Because the king of bare-knuckle boxing, Mike Perry, told him to. So, you know, that's the level of thinking we've got on that fight. But the one that interests me more, because it is the dumbest middleweight fight, Michelle Pereira against Ihor Poteria. Michelle Pereira, have you seen this guy?
Let me see.
He's basically, I don't know, what do you want to call him? Like, he's ultra athletic. Ultra, ultra athletic, but he has...
Yeah. He's the guy who does, like, backflips and, like, will run off the cage and try to, like, fucking, like, try to, like, basically, like, WWE move people. Like...
Yeah. He's just so athletic and has what must be some form of ADHD. because he just gets bored in the middle of fights and will just start, like, breakdancing. And then the third round comes, and because he's been pulling out his sweet breakdancing moves, he gets tired, and then he loses. that's the kind of stupid shit I'm into. Like, give me that. And then Ihor Poteria, I think it's Ukrainian. Is he a Ukrainian fighter? Is this the guy I'm thinking of? Let me make sure. If it is the guy I'm thinking of, though, it might not be. Give me 1 second. Yeah, he is the Ukrainian fighter. He's the guy that went to they put him up against Shogun Pua for his last fight in Brazil, and he knocked out Shogun. And you're like, well, and then he was like really like excited and amped, and it was like, why did the UFC book a guy who could knock Shogun out in his retirement fight? And then 2, like, read the room, my man. Don't you shouldn't celebrate after you knock out living legend Shogun Hua in front of his home country. He's actually pretty good. He's another one of these guys that has like one round of cardio, but is pretty entertaining when he does fight. Good stand up, like good. I mean, like good for middleweight, right? Good stand up, but like a pretty entertaining guy. He just kind of like collapses after the first round. And Michelle Pereira also does that, not because he like mentally collapses, but because he's, like you said, spent the entire first round doing backflips and like showing that like, hey, I can do like a bicycle kick in the air and almost hit you. And you're like, holy shit, better not get hit by that. But then he does it like 7 times in a row. It's kind of like if you watch anyone play like a fighting game and they just spam like the ultimate move and the stamina bar just depletes in 30 seconds. That's what Michelle Pereira does. So that should be like a crazy car crash for a round and a half. And I'm into that. Give me that. So
yeah, I'm with it.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick Ihor Poteria. I think he'll do it. He's a little bit more fundamentally sound, and I just can't trust Michelle Pereira to not, like, you know, see a flash of light in the crowd as someone takes like a picture with their cell phone and get distracted and then start like doing like, you know, no hand cartwheels for 30 seconds and then getting tuckered out. So that's my pick, Ihor Poteria over Michelle Pereira.
All right, my pick then for that. Do you say by what, knockout or?
I don't know. No, I'm not gonna fuck with that. Last time I had to watch a stupid movie. Like I'm just gonna say Ihor Poteria wins. That's it.
Okay. Any win, not decision or anything.
No, just any win. Okay. Just give me 1 point. That's all I want.
All right, I'm saying Pereira, Michelle Pereira, by decision.
Okay.
Because they're going to do some other crazy shit back and forth. They're both going to get tired, and then Pereira's just going to, like, basically be on top for the, like, last round.
I mean, that could definitely happen.
Yeah. All right. We got our picks here. This is good.
See, pull a little bit of enjoyment out of this card. You can ring a little bit. Look, it's got 2 middleweights. These are the most middleweight fights we've seen in a long time. These are very middleweight. Unfortunately, we have a light heavyweight card fight on there. But it's okay.
Tell me, what do you mean by the most middleweight? Bring it for me here.
Heavyweight is the division of people that, weren't good enough to play any other sport, but are like all 6'5 and like 250 pounds. So like basically the only criteria to be a UFC heavyweight is be 6'5, 250 pounds. That's all you need. You don't need any skill. You don't need any athleticism. That's all you need. Light heavyweight are anyone who was athletic enough, but couldn't learn like how to play another sport, or we're not coordinated enough, but just are like ultra athletes, right? Yuri Prochazka, Jamal Hill, Alexander Rakic. Like these are all just like big, huge, ultra athletic people, but not a lot of skill or technique involved at all. It's just like the division of like uber athletes who are like, I guess I'll try 10,000 moves and see who wins. And then middleweight is the division where we're finally getting to a point where you have to have some semblance of skill to your game, but you can still be like really big athlete man. So when you look at these fights, like Paul Craig, not an athletic man at all, but he's like, I'll actually learn how to do submission wrestling, I'll actually learn Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so he actually can submit people. Whereas a lot of middleweights are like, I took one class in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, decided I didn't like it, and so I'll never do it again. So he can he can become a top 15 despite being, I mean, not coordinated at all. Same with Kyle Bahalio. He's, I mean, a little bit more athletic, but mostly mostly another, like, grappler, which is, like, cool. So that'll be, I guess, somewhat interesting. But it's, again, it's this weird thing where when they were statting out their characters, they're like, put it all in jiu-jitsu and then nothing else. And you're like, well, maybe you should think about it. Anyway. And then Michelle Pereira, right? I mean, he looks like he would be a trapeze artist in an old-timey vaudeville, like, circus, right? He's just, like, doing weird flips and spinning and, like, all right, cool. Now, do you know how to throw a punch? Not really, but he just statted it out full athleticism. Cool. And Ihor Poteria was like, I want to be the best, like, one-round fighter I can be, but then I would like everything to implode after that. So it's just, it's like these weird, mad concoctions of, like, you know, you're just, like, almost purposely creating, if you're, like, making a fighting game character, like, purposely making a broken character that wouldn't actually be useful. And going, oh, like, well, this will be fun. And that's what the middleweight division is, right? So I love it, right? And it's light heavyweight also has a lot of that, but there is just so little skill for most of the fighters. And I mean, like, truly dreadful, so little skill that it becomes difficult to watch. Whereas middleweight is, like, just on the fringes enough to where I'm like, this is entertaining. I'm having a good time watching this. Yeah. So, yeah, the most middleweight fights ever, right? Unathletic Scotsman who has a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Crazy carnival flipping man. and then dude who I don't know. They it's like they built a self-destruct switch into Ihor Poteria after round one. Like, you turn the robot on for 5 minutes, and then it just kills itself at the end. Which, that's cool. Let's see what that looks like when it's fighting. Yeah. Fun.
Wow. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what middleweight is. That's why I enjoy it. I don't hate it as much as you say that I hate it. I love it. I love middleweight. I just, it's, yeah, but everything above middleweight I can't stand because all the fun gets leached out because it becomes too absurd, right? It moves from, like, I don't know. It moves from, like, almost David Lynchian weirdness in the middleweight division to then just, like, really bad amateur, like, film school kid who's trying to do surrealism. That's my really pretentious way of describing these two
divisions. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Thank you for that.
All righty. Anything else you want to talk about? I mean, that's 301. Next week we will, or not next week, this Friday, we will talk about, we'll just do like a retrospective on Jose Aldo.
Yes, I'm very excited for that. I love Jose Aldo so much.
I think he's of my top five best fighters I've ever seen. He's in there, right? He's got, and probably has one of the best careers I've ever seen. It's interesting. I was thinking about, like, who are the best fighters I've ever seen recently, mostly because we were talking about Max in the BMF belt, and I was like, Max has got to be in my top five. Like, he's really, like, his career is astonishing. Mm-hmm. And then I said, well, because he beat Jose Aldo, and Jose Aldo's in the top five. And then I was like, well, Alexander Volkanovski beat both of them, so he's got to be in the top five. And then I realized the featherweight division might have three of the best fighters that have ever been in the UFC. And that's pretty astonishing to all be in one weight class. And who fucking knows? Ilya Topuria might be right up there with them. I mean, he's pretty young, but...
Yeah, and it's still early. It's very early in his career, so relatively speaking.
Yeah, so cut light heavyweight, cut heavyweight, and, like, let's just blow up the featherweight division, because that's where it's at, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, looking through. Yeah, Jose Aldo's a man. Like, holy shit.
Just a stud. Like, phenomenal. A phenomenal fighter. I feel so bad. I mean, it was cool to see in real time, and the McGregor experience was exciting on his come up and everything that came after that knockout. But
yeah,
I kind of feel bad because that is, like, for a lot of casual fans, that is the only thing they really think about when they think about Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But looking through his record and seeing, I'm just flooded with all the memories of, like, some of the things he did to these fighters, and, like, all very, like, game, high level fighters at that time, you know, and, like, damn, his, yeah, holy shit. He's had quite the career.
Yeah, I know. I think the first time I saw him fight, I had seen the Cub Swanson fight on TV, but I actually went to WEC 48 in Sacramento. I saw him fight Uriah Faber. Dude, and those leg kicks, the whole fight, I was just like, Jesus Christ. Oh my God. It was brutal. That was one of those moments where I remember watching the fight live and being like, they should probably just stop this. Like, Uriah Faber doesn't need to keep getting kicked in the leg like this.
That one was a brutal one.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll reminisce more about him a little later. Yes. Anything else you want to discuss? Do you want to talk about the fights last week or any news or anything or?
I think like we talked about before, I think we'll need a little bit more time to talk about the Apex fights as a whole and like what we're really doing with all of them here.
We're gonna have the 100th Apex card by the end of this year.
Yeah.
So that'll be a thing. it's really disappointing because like we'll talk about the Apex card a little bit later. It's I don't mind the venue. I wish they would do a little bit more with the venue. I kind of like that it's really quiet in the venue because you can kind of hear what the coaches are saying. You can hear the impact. You can hear the breathing of the fighters, which I think is
yeah, you're cool. Not swayed by the crowd.
Yeah. I just wish they would not fill it with garbage fights. But really the thing too, but that they can also do is like, you know, we don't need to have 14 fights on these Apex cards.
Right, right.
You can.
They don't need to be full card
fighters. Yeah, why not have like fights on like a Tuesday and a Thursday and make it a 4-fight card?
Yeah.
Right? Just really quick, just a little bite-sized. It's an hour of fights. That's it. Moving on. That would be much more pleasurable. But that's not going to be the case. Anyway, so UFC 301 will be good. I fingers crossed I don't have to watch another one of these terrible movies. I've already got yours picked out.
Which,
if my tortured cinema metaphor is any indication, it definitely will not be a bad MMA movie. It will be a very pretentious, annoying martial arts movie.
What does that even mean?
You'll have to see.
How do you have a pretentious martial arts movie?
Oh, bro, you're gonna love it. It's got Jesse Eisenberg in it, the dude from Social Network. You're gonna lose your mind. You're gonna love it. Don't look it up.
I won't.
Be surprised, because, I mean, with my picks, it could just be, athleticism beats skill, youth beats age, and, insane, impossible to pick middleweight fight is a flip of a coin. And so it's very likely I still lose. even though I knew who Usyk was, I thought about the style matchup, and I'm more obsessed with middleweight than you are. It's, again, just shows that the universe doesn't care. No amount of preparation or careful consideration actually yields any results. Chaos comes for us all. Anyway, why don't you sign us off?
All right. Thank you for that. All right, this has been another episode of Two Fight Fans Podcast. I'm one of your fight fans, Colin.
And I'm a more dedicated fight fan, Stuart.
Thanks for tuning in. And then listen for our next episode about where we do a good compilation tribute to the King of Rio, Jose Aldo.
Yeah, we'll wax poetic on his leg kicks. We'll talk about all of the wonderful ups and downs. And, just really, it's a bummer that this is his kind of, I mean, his last send-off was really bad. We signed off. I can't talk more about this. All right, bye, everyone.
Next time.
Yeah.